Hello and welcome to the 4D Human Being podcast. I'm your host, Katie Churchman, and today we're talking about worry. But don't worry, Philippa has gone bullet point crazy with all the topics we would love to cover on this very important subject. We hope you enjoy the show.
All right. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
It might be the morning, Phil.
It might be the morning.
Or evening.
Where you are.
Well, I listen to podcasts quite a lot at night, but it does only mean I've only caught about the first 5 minutes of most podcasts I've listened to recently.
But it then gets recorded as all being listened to.
I know, it's annoying. Then you don't know what you've heard and what you haven't.
Don't know what you've heard. Same with audiobooks.
The trials and tribulations of our lives.
Seriously. Honestly. I mean, well, something
super
to worry
about. If Andy does not provide us a jingle, the listeners are going to have to be subjected to our
not so super segue jingles.
Hi guys, Andy here, the editor of the podcast. Penn and Phil have hinted quite often that I should probably write on a theme tune for Super Segue. Well, I've caved. Here it is.
Yes, we are going to talk about worry today. And before you say anything, Penelope, is it okay to say?
You're more about asking forgiveness than permission, Phil. So,
oh yeah.
So
I'm just going to say it. Okay. Is it fair to say that you are a really good person to have a conversation with about worrying?
I don't know what you mean.
It's just a question.
I've written some notes, which I don't usually do around our podcast.
Was it because you were worried about this one?
Well, there you go. I think you'd primed my brain with the word worry. Mm. But I think why I wrote notes is exactly that, which is I may well go down the route of saying, oh, I'm such a worrier. And I just, you know, wanted to Google some stuff that I recall from my positive psychology studies.
MA,
drop that in.
Don't worry. Nobody need to worry. She's fully qualified to talk about worry.
Well, I remember reading this particular thing in my studies. I love a clipboard and a file and a sort of satchel, Phil.
Well,
we're going to talk about lists
and control.
Love
yes,
it. Anyway,
go on.
But I recall this piece because it sung to me, and maybe we'll come on to it around. Yes, worry and or perhaps you could reframe it in a different way, and perhaps there are some useful elements to it and not so useful elements. But we'll
absolutely
come on to that.
Cento per cento, as I would say in my Italian lesson.
You are so Italiano.
Actually, your daughter said to me on the school pickup, it might have been because I'd picked her up and you hadn't.
I know what this is going to be.
I know. Now, I just want to say, listeners, for those of you who don't know, Penelope lived in Italy for 16 years, and I have a 1 hour lesson a week.
According to my youngest.
Yeah, she said, oh, your Italian's so much better than mummy's. And I said, Stella, as much as I'd love that to be true, it really, really isn't. And she always comes back to the same reasoning. She says, it is because she can't say the word orso.
So
which
annoying.
Is fair,
well,
exactly,
because of the R. To all the mothers and fathers out there, I don't know if it's just me. It can't just be me, but I'm never going to do anything wonderful in the eyes of my children.
Well, I think it's a rite of passage, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if we think about it in developmental terms, and it's the same developmental model that we'd use on leaders and teams, there comes that point where you move out of the conforming, do it by the rules, and you want to break the rules. And that's where your children are. And of course, the first thing you can do is start to test the boundaries of what you can say to mummy and daddy, who were the rule givers or the authority givers. So that's the rebellion, isn't it?
It is. I don't know if this is fortunate for my children or not fortunate for my children, but I have such a high level of security and trust in their love for me. Like, it's,
yeah, of course.
You know, we all have our insecurities in life, but in terms of being a good mother and being loved as a mother, I have to say I don't have many insecurities about that. So she can, I've allowed her to say pretty much anything she likes to me, because it is pretty much like water off a duck's back.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I know you love me. So she's really pushed the boundaries, but it's unfortunately for her, there's very little impact on me.
But I love that, because it means she gets to test being a bit cheeky, but knowing that she's not hurting.
Yeah, she loves
that.
Which
is sort of interesting. Yeah, sort of playful.
Yeah. That's one thing I don't worry about.
No, okay, good. Well, okay, you had a better segue than me. I was going to do this.
I know!
You interrupted my super segue! With a better segue than the super segue jingle was going
to
offer.
I had to grab that opportunity when it happened.
But I suppose that's good. So you don't worry about your children's love for you. Yay! but do you worry about your children?
Oh, goodness me, yes. My goodness. Phil, yes. I mean, my sister Charlotte laughs at me because she is a very, very laissez-faire, relaxed parenter in terms of her style. And she does laugh at me in terms of my worry for them.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk about worry. Now, I want to say two things as an intro. I've got loads of notes, Pen.
You worry about your dog, though, who is like your son.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about that, because he's my exactly. When someone's, you're like, exactly. He's not a dog. He's a child. So I've got like one B, number two, three. I've got loads of things on this.
You've gone full list.
Well, because I think it's such an interesting topic, and I think our challenge is going to be, my worry is that, how do we keep it sort of on the middle track? Because you can branch so easily off
of this
topic.
I've got lots of branching here. What's also interesting about what you just said is how much we use the word worry in the English language. Well, my worry is, what I'm worried about is.
Oh, okay. So that's another bullet point to add. Yeah. No, but it's good. It's good that how psychoactive, how priming language is. So as an intro, this is a couple of things that came up for me for us to kind of launch from. One is that, this was off the back of a conversation I was having with the lovely Jay, who is doing some work at my house and is also doing some work at your house. Thank you, Jay. And we were talking about worry. And he was talking about the phrase that he spoke to a doctor about, worry yourself sick. And he said this doctor said, you know, there is sort of no truer phrase, really, that it really is true that you can worry yourself sick. And we know how thoughts and emotions, if they're kind of repeated and they're negative, how much they then impact us physiologically and health wise. So that's the first thing. That was the kind of real kickoff that I was thinking about this year and some of the programs we're running and trying to help people with resilience and dealing with just the day to day, not, you know, let alone whether something's actually happened or will something happen, and work and jobs and money and, I mean, everything. Yeah. That actually we're in real danger of worrying ourselves sick. And then off the back of that, just to kind of give the counterpoint to it almost, there was somebody on the radio, I think it was like a book, you know, book program on the radio, and they were asked, the guests were asked what quotable advice they'd been given, and one of the guests said that his father had given him a really good piece of advice around problems and worrying about problems, that whenever a problem comes in, or your child comes to you with a problem, or a friend, or you've got one, is just kind of look at it and go, is this a bowling ball? And what he meant by that is that if you imagine a bowling alley with skittles at the end, 9 times out of 10, if you're not a very good player, but really often those bowling balls go down the side alley and never touch any of the skittles.
Yeah.
And the next thing is, you know, they might hit one skittle, but the chances of you hitting all those skittles and it being a really big problem is minimal.
Yeah,
so he was saying, I often now, if like his daughter comes to him with a problem, he'll look at her and go, I think that's a bowling ball.
That's a really good
phrase. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, I like that.
And it's so true that I think our mother said something similar to us years ago. I certainly credit her with it, but something like 90% of the things you worry about.
No, it's so true. Happen. Well, I remember going through my divorce many moons ago and feeling very stressed.
Why do we mark time in moons? It's quite nice, isn't it?
In moons?
Yeah, many moons ago. It's rather nice.
That is rather nice. Poetic. We also do mark time in big events, actually, when I think about it. I have to track time going back based on big events. Anyway, I remember, just feeling generally very stressed. I mean, physiologically, the body was in a heightened state of stress for pretty continuously for quite a number of months. And I remember you saying to me, how much time per day on average do you actually spend dealing with the fallout of the divorce, whether that's lawyers or the ex or whatever it might be? And how much time do you actually spend thinking about it? And it was such a wake-up call to me because I realized the actual interaction was absolutely minimal.
What a wise old bird I was back then.
So wise, Phil. So it's the worry of the stuff that causes the stress.
That's not actually happening. So that leads me on to, I wouldn't call
it
a super...
You're not old, by the way.
No, I'm not old. No, it's just a phrase.
Or a phrase.
Language or a bird. That leads me on to a sort of average segue, which is...
You're not going to top mine.
I know. Well, it's a really good point around... So... How much time are we worrying about things rather than actually dealing with them? Exactly that. It's not actually happening. It's not actually present. In fact, something else is present. We're having a cup of tea or watching the television or eating a meal or with our family or friends. That's what's actually happening, but we're caught in our heads. And the other thing is then our belief about worry. That I was looking at this morning. It's a bit like the Kelly McGonigal, the belief in stress. Mm. That if you believe that worry is bad for you, then you've just added another layer on top. If you believe that your worry is problem-solving focused, already you've got... I mean, that's before we've even looked at the worrying.
Yes.
Like, what do you believe about worry? Are you adding another layer of worrying about the worry?
That's right.
So that
ties to the piece that I was interested in when, I'm just going to mention it one more time, when I did my studies back in the day,
Did you do a positive psychology master's?
I did, Phil.
Hang on a minute.
You're a qualified psychotherapist, Miss Certificate, certificates all over the wall.
What grade did you get?
Oh, is this a competition on mature study?
No, you definitely win this one.
No, I definitely don't. I got a merit, I think.
I thought you got a distinction.
I don't think I did. I can't remember now, Phil.
Yes, you did. You definitely got a distinction.
Let's say we did. I don't think I did, but let's say we did.
We'll say you did. Okay, anyway, so definitely qualified.
So what I was going to say is around what you said, which is worry being defensive pessimism. So...
Oh, go on, discuss.
Which is much more... I mean, it can be annoying for other people if you're a slightly defensive pessimist, but I think that I have elements of that, which is it's less about purposeless... what is that word?
Rumination.
Oh, you knew the word. It's like telepathy.
I know.
And it's much more about preparing yourself.
Well, I literally can do a super segue to my note 1B, as it's called on my note paper.
Something's happened to you. Someone's inhabited my twin sister's body.
Well, to be fair, if you saw the way it was scribbled on a piece of paper, which has also got sketches for a Christmas card on it, it's not exactly. But anyway, it's a good start. So that is a really good point about worry. Is it coming from a need for safety and a fear around something going wrong? Or is it coming from a place of caring motivation to solve a problem and get something really good? So that's the first thing about it. And you're absolutely right. And you see this a lot in with anxiety in a psychotherapy room, that the rumination, which is, I guess, kind of extreme worry, where you really can't, and then the even more extreme would be getting into an obsessive compulsive pattern, can be seen, rumination, overthinking, can be seen as a defense against feeling.
Ah.
So what are the feelings that sit underneath that worry? And that probably, as you've talked about, will probably be around fear of not being able to control the future, fear, ultimately the big existential fear of our own mortality. but that we don't want to feel those feelings.
Yeah.
So, or it could be, you know, ruminating about a project or work and the fear of failure or the fear of getting something wrong. So there'll be a fear sitting under there.
Yeah.
That if we can go through the wall of fire, you know, as Glennon Doyle said, our feelings are for feeling, which I just totally love. And we've sort of forgotten that. But that actually it's that it's a bit like worrying yourself sick. You're doing something in the meantime that is actually a defense against the thing you're frightened of. But the thing that you're doing is actually harming you as well.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, Phil, because I would say being a worrier, you know, is partly linked to problem solving. And I think I certainly would in the past have defined myself as quite a worrier. And I think in a way it has served me because, you know, I've pushed myself very, very hard to avoid those, certainly those negative outcomes academically or career wise. So it can serve a purpose. It can, exactly as you said, serve a motivational purpose. But I just wonder if we're not awake to it, it must just be so easy to tip over into the rumination.
Well, it's when it starts to have control over you, isn't it? And it's not actually productive. It's a learnt habit.
Yeah.
It becomes your operating mode. And actually, in a way, perhaps if you sat down of an evening on your own, you wouldn't know, your mind wouldn't know what else to do.
No, well, as you say to me, and we do mention it in regards to our mother as well, if I've run out of things to worry about, I'll make something up to worry.
Do you know what I thought you were going to say then? I thought you were going to say, if I run out of things to worry about, I'm worried. And there is sort of something there in
is.
That, isn't
I
there?
Do wake up in the morning and I do have a habit around this, but I am aware that I do it. So as soon as I've done it, I go, oh, there it is. There's my daily ritual. I wake up in the morning and it's like one of those old Rolodexes going round in my head. And you know, in that sort of half sleepy state, I'm just clicking through. What's the thing? What's the thing? What's the thing? And I'll just click through what's gone on the day before until I land on the thing that might be causing me some worry. Oh, there it is. But I know I'm doing it.
So, and then what happens? So then you find it.
I feel settled because I've remembered what the thing, the worry, the top of the list worry is for the day.
So interesting. So knowing the thing that you can now worry about actually settles you.
Yeah, because I go, oh, there it is. That's what that, I know that's the thing. But I was so aware that I'm doing it, but it's such an embedded pattern of behavior.
That's so interesting. I definitely don't have that. I'm mainly thinking, oh, wish somebody could make me a cup of tea. No, I'm not. That's my worry. No, but is it because then you know.
You've got to train your dog to do that, Phil.
Seriously. He's doing nothing at the moment. Are you, Billy? He's not even answering. What are you choosing to focus on? And it's so much of this comes back to that our brain does not know the difference between what the world feeds it and what we feed it. That if we make a choice, we can totally change our personal experience. That William James quote that I've got on my therapy website. You know, if you can change your mind, you can change your life.
Yeah.
And that makes me think, Pen, of sort of moving towards what can we do? So we kind of understand a bit what worry is or why it's there, but what can we do? And so much of worry is about the internal creation of the worst case scenario. You know, the Stoics talk about this, and there can be a use to it, that if you think of the worst case scenario, and I know people who do it.
Well, that's the defensive pessimism. Getting yourself psychologically prepared for the worst case, so that if it happens, you're ready for it.
Totally. So exactly that it can be really, really useful. And Stoicism would absolutely say that, you know, if you imagine that there's going to be terrible traffic, you're probably need to go off the road for petrol at one point. Like if you just imagine all the worst don't even talk about petrol. I know exactly. You'll have to walk to a petrol station because you don't stop for petrol.
Exactly.
So the worst case scenario that they would actually say, that's really useful because you will allow this. Goes back to our, you know, being late podcast, that you'll then allow enough time and, you know, you'll put that contingency in place. So really, really useful. The thing is, when it becomes just a habitual habit that is not about, I've got a trip coming up, what's the worst case scenario? Or I've got a work project, can I think of all the worst things that could happen so I can...
That would take up all of your day, I think.
Well, exactly. Exactly. But actually, when it just becomes the worry about, you know, I don't know, how long will my dog live? Or what if something happens one day in the mystical future to my child? Like it, all of that very futuristic fantasy worry that you can't do anything about at the moment. Yeah. That, going back to what we were talking about of how you focus your mind, we talk a lot about that relationship between anxiety and creativity. And if you can channel anxiety into creativity, you are playing in a different game, my friend.
We had this the other day, didn't we, with Stella, my youngest, where she was getting all sort of a bit angsty and a bit worried and a bit pokey. She was just getting a bit. And you just said to me, we need to turn this into creativity. And then you just got her engaged in...
It was sewing in the end. We tried so many things, didn't we?
Right, it was sewing. And there, all of that energy that was building up inside her went into this crazy little monster thing that she sewed.
Exactly. So if we think about it as an energy that is currently attaching itself to all the fears and worries, like it's floating out there, grabbing on to all the fears and worries and creating this whole picture. If we harness that energy and start imagining amazing things that could happen, or the things that we would love to happen in life, suddenly we're visualizing the future that we want. And we know how effective that is.
It's like the antidote, isn't it? Or the flip side of the coin.
Totally.
To anxiety, creativity. In fact, I was talking to my coach this morning about this, because I said to her, this lockdown situation that we're in will, to a large extent, highlight which of the two camps you tend to fall into. Do you fall into the camp that will wake up in the morning and think, what can I create today? Or will you fall into the camp of, how can I respond or solve what's going to happen to me today? And if I'm really honest, my natural tendency is probably in the second camp. Like, I know things are going to happen, but I know that I can solve and cope and work through pretty well. I'm much more likely to turn to you, Phil, to let's sew a crazy monster, or let's, you know, do some Christmas crafting. But when you're in a situation as we are now that can really fill you with anxiety, if you can't dial up that creative spirit, you're at the mercy of your anxiety because you've got nowhere to put it.
Totally. And exactly that. And I really love thinking about anxiety as free floating. It doesn't always feel it because it attaches itself to something.
Yeah.
But that underlying feeling, when it rises up, it's like glue. It's like Velcro. It will find something. So if you can direct it somewhere else. There was a lovely program on the radio the other day about creativity and the creative constraints of the current era. That it was actually dancers talking about it, that they've had to think about ways of dancing and performing that they would never have done. And I thought, that's happened to us. It's the same, you know, and there's something really wonderful about that. If you can channel it.
I have drawn the line today at cooking a wartime recipe, which was the homework of my youngest, which is find a recipe from World War II and make it. And I just looked at these recipes and I thought, where do I get dried egg from?
But what I love about that though, Pen, is that she had so little worry about it.
None.
That there was no energy to even turn into creative. No. She was so not bothered about it. No. I hope her teachers don't listen to this podcast.
I did say to her, we could print off a recipe and you could draw some pictures around it. And she was like, nah.
I mean,
let's focus elsewhere, darling.
That is so enviable, though. Does she not worry? Does she not worry that she'll get told off by teacher?
No.
Sounds that wonderful.
I know. I have to say, I'm a little bit envious of her in that respect. But this does lead me on to another strategy that I have around worry. Okay. We'll come back to creativity because it's very important. But something that has definitely shifted in me over the years, and I think in a positive way, although there can be a flip side to it, is around lowering my expectations.
Oh,
I know.
I think this is the call for the Frozen theme tune.
Because if I've lowered my expectations about things, then I've got less to worry about, really.
Oh, I'm going to counterbalance that. I've got a flip side to that. If you can, at the same time, here we go. This is off the cuffles. Let's see if this works. At the same time, lower your expectations.
Yeah.
And at the same time, absolutely own that with the years of experience that you've got on this planet, you've already got everything that you need. Yeah. And suddenly you're in a win-win.
Well, what's the phrase that you and Tom always used to use? I'm hopeful but not optimistic.
Yeah, that was Tom, hopeful but not optimistic. Well, I think I'm quite optimistic, but he was hopeful but not optimistic.
But I kind of like that. Like, I've got hope for it and I'll go for it, but I'm not setting my expectations very high. It's a nicer place to operate from. I mean, you don't want to become totally inert and lose interest in doing or achieving anything in life. But I do wonder, we talk a lot about the gap between the reality of our lives and the expectations. And I do wonder, for some of us, not all of us, reducing that gap a little bit can help with the pain we
you
feel.
Speak to the Buddhism, my friend. Actually, I think I think perhaps even a phrase that's slightly less sort of debatable, because, you know, we could debate optimism and hopefulness till the cows come home. But, you know, Buddhism would talk about not being attached to the outcome. Yeah. And if we think about worry, I think this is really interesting, because what are we worried about? We're usually worried. I'm not saying this is always. Usually worried about an outcome, about an event. Yeah. I don't know if we as much worry about our process of being in something. I think usually it's about if something happens,
yeah,
isn't it?
I think so.
So if actually we can focus more on the, who's that bear?
Yeah, there's just a steamroller has just gone past on the road, which he's not partial to.
Have you gone back to the 19th century?
I don't know what's going on, Phil. So they've put cones outside the house, and all up and down the street, it's all of a furore on WhatsApp because nobody knows why these cones are.
Is there worry down the street? Oh my God, that's hilarious. Oh, well, that totally brings me on to, having to know,
yeah,
like how, like what, like what, that's about control, isn't
yeah.
it? That's somewhere to get to around how we can reduce worry by just going, I'm all right not knowing.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was now, because we went to steamrolling and your dog called Bear. I mean, I don't know. I literally don't know where
you were.
I
doing
am.
A whole Buddhism thing.
Oh yeah, Buddhism thing. Oh yeah. So I mean, really, this comes down to the same thing, doesn't it? I mean, I feel like so many of these things come back to the same point, which is about if we can be in the present, which of course is most of the problem with worry, yeah. that we are absolutely shunting ourselves out into the future. Even if we're thinking about the past, we're usually worried about the impact on the future. Relationships or, you know, events or jobs or whatever. But if we can become more interested, curious about the process and less attached to the outcome, boy, that is a tonic. That, you know, if people don't go, wow, that was amazing, but you go, God, that was interesting. That was an interesting process.
Yeah.
I didn't get the job, but oh, it was interesting. I learned something.
Right. Well, what's the gift? Oh, just pulling all the strands together, Phil, of our work.
Pulling all the strands together.
Do you think, you don't think you're a worrier then?
I don't think I'm not, it's not a pattern. No, I think I tend to go towards creativity. I think there's a slightly different one for me. I'm not usually trying to solve problems. I worry about people being okay. That's the one that comes up for me, you know, not upsetting people and et cetera, et cetera. But I think, like you said, having been through certain things in life, I don't worry about my ability to respond. I mean, I say that now. It's so interesting. They're so interesting, those questions, aren't they? Because for all of us, that is so shiftable, you know, in what context, with what people, in what state. You know, it makes me go back to Deb Dana's work. I know I've mentioned it so many times, but it's so relevant on the sort of autonomic nervous system. That story follows state, that the story that we give, you know, am I a worrier? Am I not a worrier? Well, in my current state, I would definitely say not, because story follows state, which actually brings me to a really good, you know, couple of resources around worrying, is that those parts of us will often have a posture attached. So some people, for example, will go quite inert or quite hunched. Some people will be pacing, quite the opposite. They'll be moving around. But if you can notice what your body, what what posture is attached to the worry, actually you can access it at a bodily point as opposed to a mental point and totally reverse it. So if you usually pace, try something completely different.
I've got the inertia thing. I mean, literally I stopped breathing. So going for a run, not saying I do that often, but going for a run is a very good way to release any worry or anxiety.
Can we talk about dance classes?
Oh, Lordy. I'm dancing to The Colour of Blue, Phil. It's a real edge for me. It's free form contemporary. I mean,
I literally have never heard you say those words.
Literally, if there was a camera in my kitchen when I do the dancing, I don't know what you would be witness to.
I mean, part of me is intrigued, but I must say it's not the most generous part of me.
But even I have to close my eyes when I'm doing it.
That's what I
don't want to be witness to.
Stop it. I don't want to be witness to my own dancing. But do you know, what I love about that, this came up in a conversation I was having with the lovely Jessie Pavelka, shout out to you, Jessie, the other day, around how we feel about ourselves and how different it is if we're looking in the mirror and having a conversation with ourselves versus just having a conversation with ourselves. And yours is the extreme version of that, of dancing and watching yourself versus dancing and feeling
Well, so I'm going to say this is a slight sort of bigging myself up, but my teacher, the lovely Melissa, does say...
has asked you to audition for Chicago the musical.
The West End is calling, darling. She said, when I close my eyes...
Yes.
It's just a completely different experience watching me. Now, I'm not saying I would hold up the glitter ball of Strictly, but even I can feel in my body the difference in the experience of dancing versus when my eyes are open.
100%. And this is a little bit of a kind of tangent, isn't it, from worry, but I remember going to Pineapple for dance classes and trying to get the dance routine right, which is obviously what you have to do, and it's fine. That's the discipline. That's what you do. And I remember, funnily enough, it was a French person I'd met on a drama kind of course in France, and she'd come over to England and she saw me in Pineapple, and then we were kind of versus, honestly, dancing under the trees in the moonlight in France, you know, after a meal. I know, magical. And she said, oh my goodness, she said, you dance so differently when you're just dancing for yourself. Like, it's so much more fluid and I was like, yeah, of course it is, because you're not caught in that, am I doing, the external...
No. Well, I believed I could be a choreographer after my last session with Melissa.
Can I just link that back to what we were talking about earlier? That what I love about that is you're definitely not worrying about not being good enough. Like, you've definitely replaced that anxiety with a creative vision that you could be choreographing Strictly Come Dancing. I mean, why not?
Well, you gotta believe.
Even if it takes you off the canvas of life, you've got to keep believing. Painting off the canvas.
I'm definitely painting off the canvas, and I've got my eyes closed in my dance lesson.
Listen, Pen, anything is possible.
Yes, almost. That's right. I remember saying a few years ago to someone, I'd been to our lovely Juicy Mountain that we absolutely love, and I'd done some yoga classes, and I'd done a lot of yoga in a short space of time, and I remember thinking, God, I'm good at this. Like, I could be a yoga teacher. And she laughed, and I thought, but anybody could be a yoga teacher if that's what they put in mind.
Now, who was this person?
Now, I'm not saying that it's likely I will either become a yoga teacher or a West End musical theatre choreographer. It's not very likely, but it's not totally impossible.
Well,
yes it is.
No, I 100% agree with you. And also, we wrote a newsletter about this, didn't we, a while ago, of not only that and how fun and that those visions and dreams are, but also what's the equivalent of that? You know, that you get your kids to do a routine. Like, what's the local equivalent of those things that actually give you satisfaction? But the main thing I'd say to that is what is so glorious about that is you're not full of anxiety and worry that you're not going to be the next, you know, Craig Revel Horwood or, you know, like some kind of, you know, amazing choreographer. What those fantasies actually give you pleasure and joy.
Totally.
So there's a big difference, isn't there, between enjoying the idea of what's possible, and then turning that into a not good enough. How no, am I going to get there?
I definitely don't do that.
Yeah, so just enjoy the dream.
There's a massive expectation gap.
No, there you go. It goes back to expectation. Yeah, I love
it. One thing I just want to mention in terms of the creativity offer, in terms of, you know, reducing anxiety and I absolutely love your creativity, Phil. I love that you bring it to my kids. If I can just ask as a mother, if you can find creative outlets that don't involve me having more stuff accumulating in my house that's made of bits of stick and paper.
In fact, I love the process,
but the mothers are left with this stuff and then you just can't throw it away. You can't throw anything away.
I did think about that. In fact, for those of you listening, I even had one of, well, it was both your children in the end, wasn't it? But one of them round, and we were doing some origami crafting and we'd done all the bits and pieces, and then you came to pick her up and I said, oh, you don't want to leave your origami here. And
I was
yeah, you really do, because what I need is more paper
I've
bits
I've still
in
got
my
all
house.
That sitting in a bowl. I don't know what to do with that. Anyway.
I don't know what to tell you, Pen. It's my gift to you.
No, that's really mean of me, because they absolutely they love crafting with Auntie. So embrace and enjoy, I say.
I love it. Yeah. So worry. I mean, look, there's a bigger piece to worry that we mustn't, you know, these are some thoughts on it and kind of, you know, where it comes from, why we have it. But actually, there can be deeper work needed around it. But I love your piece, Pen, around recognizing the pattern and sort of finding a bit of humor around it, going, oh, there I go again. And it's that intentional, you know, sort of witness position, that if you can grow that, then you're no longer drowning in the experience. There's a part of you that is outside of it. And that's the beginning, isn't it, of getting out of it.
And I would mention, Phil, that, you know, and we've said this before on this podcast, that I was saying to my coach this morning, love my coach, I feel incredibly privileged and incredibly lucky that you know, I run this wonderful business with you, and I have a very nice home and, you know, kids that are well and healthy and, you know, very, very fortunate in terms of the situation that I have in what is a global, very difficult situation. So there is a scale of worry and, you know, not to belittle any of it, you know, whether it's something incredibly difficult, such as illness or grief, or whether it's something, you know, that perhaps doesn't seem quite as important. I mean, I guess the actual psychological process that we go through and the patterns we get caught in, they are the same across the scale. It's not to say that the pain of the worry won't be significantly different, but I guess it is still around pattern.
Yeah, I agree. And really good shout, and really important to say that obviously there's, I mean, we always talk in therapy about, you know, that there's no scale in terms of people's problems. You have to be really careful with it, because if it's, you know, if, you know, the colour of your kitchen is making you unable to get out of the bed in the morning, then, you know, you've got an issue.
That's very real to you.
Yeah, it's very real to you, and it's not about the kitchen. But it is a very good, you know, it is important. But what came up for me as you said that was the difference between the worry of, you know, putting food on the table and those, or, you know, having shelter or having job or having enough money, those external things that of course impact us hugely, the sort of the beginning of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if I think about it now, you know, physiological, yeah, shelter, safety, all those things. Yeah. But and the worry that actually might not be attached to that, but is actually more attached to you just not being comfortable with yourself.
Yeah.
That they both might create worry and rumination, but actually they need different approaches.
Yeah.
That, you know, one of them needs either a level of, well, this is where I am, and practical steps of what can I do to move this, and the other one needs the deeper work around self-acceptance and pattern recognition, all those things. So I think that's also important that there are quite different things that we worry about. And I think sometimes those defense mechanisms are more about not wanting to face the parts of ourselves that we're struggling with, rather than, oh, you know, I bought the wrong colour sweater. Like,
well, it's so,
you know what I mean?
So often comes back to the self, Phil. I mean, something you mentioned earlier about our fear about not being able to respond to whatever the problem that's going to arise. it so often does come back to that as opposed to the fear of the actual problem itself. So
yeah.
I'm not saying it's always the case, but very often when I find myself in a state of worry, it does just come back to the self and the response and the and the ability to respond in a way that is going to make you feel okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to finish with a little trip, a little model that I love that Kevin gave me. And it was actually from a brilliant coach he knows called Marcia. And it was it was the three selves. And it really ties in with the wall of fire that we can, and there's lots of psychotherapeutic, psychological models it sort of that you can lead to this. But I really like it. It's that there's three selves, and one is the front that we show to the world. And there we are going, no, it's fine. and then a lot of us. And then behind it is the self that we're really frightened that we are. And that might be the worrier, the anxious self, the sad self, the fearful self, the not good enough self, all of the stuff that we're probably trying to avoid with the cover of rumination and worry. And certainly when it's about the self as opposed to external things. So the second self is that we've got to keep the front on because otherwise we'll have to face that we're that. Yeah. But actually there's a third self that is our real self, but you have to go through the second self to get there. Yeah. And I love that. And it's having the courage to go, what is underneath this worry? And if I can go through that wall of fire, oh, I'm free. I'm free.
Cue Elsa, let it go.
Thank you for joining us today for the show. We know lots of us have worries in life, and this is perfectly normal. And unless you are a professional bowler, how many of those worry bowling balls actually get knocked down? Can we be more conscious about what we choose to focus on? And can we sometimes transform our worry into creativity? And finally, don't worry, the 4D podcast will be back soon with another episode. And between then and now, do check out 4dhumanbeing.com for more articles, resources, and podcasts. And remember, are you happening to the world, or is the world happening to you?